This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, it's the first big weekend of movies of 2017, and I'm going to be talking about the Lego Batman movie, John Wick Chapter 2, 50 Shades Darker, the Oscar shorts, and my continuing look back at John Hurt with 1984's 1984. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Every freaking week, I've got to do this, and we had another famous celebrity die, and it's a shame we have to say goodbye to Richard Hatch. He was 71 years old, not the guy who won Survivor, that reality TV show. No, I'm talking about Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica back in the late 70s. He played, of course, Captain Apollo, and that was a relatively short-lived show. It was only on for like 2 years. It was basically a knockoff of Star Wars, but made for television. And I mean, it's corny and it's cheesy, but you know, it's there's a lot of nostalgia to it. And he was one of the stars, along with Dirk Benedict as Starbuck. First of all, Hatch had actually given a go at trying to reboot BSG, and he did that back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, and they cut a trailer for it. I actually know the guy who did some of the cinematography for it, and it was originally supposed to be an episode, and they cut it down to a trailer, and they showed it at sci-fi conventions, and it got a lot of people jazzed. It's a really good trailer. It's a little antiquated. You can find it on the internet now, but you look at it, I mean, it's still... has the effects from the 90s, but it looked like it would have been a good show. But Universal passed on it, and then what they did is they rebooted it completely in, 2003 or something like that. Started out, I think, on NBC, and then they moved it to the Sci-Fi Channel. And eventually Richard Hatch, while he was critical of it because he saw it as competition for his own show, he ended up playing a part in it. He played the character of Tom Zarek in the reimagined version. So this guy is intimately tied with Battlestar Galactica, and it's a shame that he passed away. He died of pancreatic cancer at 71. We will miss you, Richard Hatch. Couple other pieces of news. Shailene Woodley has officially come out and said she's not going to do a Divergent TV show. Remember how we talked about last year after the third Divergent movie kind of fizzled at the box office, even though it cost more than the other two? They were trying to do the Twilight, Harry Potter, Hunger Games model of splitting that last book into two, not realizing that it worked really well for Harry Potter because that was such a long book and it has a natural middle section that kind of break it off. Allegiant didn't do that, so they're going to do Ascendant, and because this last movie didn't do so well, it got scrapped as a theatrical release, and they said maybe we'll do it at a much smaller budget on TV. And Shailene Woodley's like, yeah, I'm not going to do a TV show, even though she got her start in TV. She was in The Secret Life of the American Teenager, where she really wasn't even that good, and it wasn't until she did The Descendants that kind of put her on the map. And she's got a way bigger career. She doesn't have to go do a crappy TV show anymore. Another piece of development news that's interesting is Halloween has been sort of resurrected again, not for Halloween Resurrection, which was a terrible movie, but John Carpenter has anointed director David Gordon Green to direct and Danny McBride to help him write it. Now, they're both known best for comedies, especially Danny McBride from TV shows like Eastbound and Down and a bunch of other movies that we've seen him in, like in Tropic Thunder or Hot Rod or something like that. But they've come out and they said they're not going to make it a comedy. I mean, they want to make a serious, bona fide horror movie. And honestly, as much as my back cringes at remakes like this, I'm curious to see what David Gordon Green does. Because he's not the direct choice. When they went for Rob Zombie, that seemed like the obvious choice, but you ended up getting such a crappy movie. And David Gordon Green, I've sat down, I've interviewed the guy, I've talked to him. This guy respects film. This guy respects history of film. And while not all of his movies are good, he certainly tries to do something appropriate for any movie that he does. So I'm curious to see what he's going to do. And actually, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, at the very least, it can't be any worse than what Rob Zombie did. And when it comes down to it, as long as they're not doing found footage, I'm curious to see what they do. I think you can do a modern Halloween if you do it right. And I have a certain degree of faith in David Gordon Green. Not necessarily Danny McBride, but certainly David Gordon Green. The last piece of news I want to talk about is just a little bit of a... Everyone knows about it because a lot of people watched the Super Bowl, saw the ad. Stranger Things is getting their second season. We'll be premiering in Halloween, which is a great time to show it. And the trailer looks really cool. I'm not going to cover it in the trailer part because most of it's just noise. But this is a neat little show, and I actually think it's going to be a richer season than the first one. So I'm very much looking forward to Stranger Things Season 2. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First movie I want to hit is called Aftermath. It comes out on March 31st. It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger in a less than typical role as a father trying to track down the person he believes is responsible for the death of his family.
The company agrees to pay you damages in the amount of $75,000 for your daughter's death, $85,000 for your wife's.
Look at this photo. I would like for someone to say that they're sorry for killing my family.
Found him.
I just want to look him in the eye. I want him to apologize. No one has said they're sorry.
Apparently this in the trailer it says it's inspired by true events. I don't know how true they are. I haven't even done the research on this. You always got to be a little bit careful when you see these inspired by true events, because sometimes they, especially when it says inspired and not based on, there's a lot of dramatic liberties that are taken with a story when you have to say inspired instead of based on. Still, I'm curious to see what Schwarzenegger does with the dramatics. He did a movie that reminds me a little bit of this, although it's very different, was Maggie, the one he did with Abigail Breslin, where she was turning into a zombie. But that was more of an emotional movie than an action movie. It actually gave him a chance to show some acting chops. Now, he's not a great actor. I don't think he's ever going to win an Oscar. But I think it's neat that he's trying to do something else, because his return to big, huge action movies have been rocky at best. I mean, some of them he's done have done well, like some of the Expendable movies, but other ones that he's done, like, you know, Escape Plan or Sabotage or even the Terminator sequel, just did not do very well. The next one I want to talk about is Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Men Tell No Tales. Opens on May 26th.
Ain't no grave can hold my body down.
The dead have taken command of the sea. They're searching for a sparrow.
Well, look way down the river.
Pirate's life.
Anyone who watched the Super Bowl saw this trailer, and even though I said earlier I wasn't going to play the Stranger Things trailer because most of it was noise, this one also is mostly noise. But the reason I'm pointing this out is I'm assuming everybody saw it at the Super Bowl, or a good chunk of the audience has seen it. And what I liked about it, what I think's interesting, is the design looks very creepy and very well done. I mean, if you look back, what was it, 2003? 2004? When the first Pirates of the Caribbean came out more than a dozen years ago. And that one actually had some really good effects to it. But we have such better effects now, and they've gotten so much more nuanced. I'm curious to see what they do with the imagery and the look. And each of these movies have gotten progressively grimier and darker and grimmer. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie, because I like the last one. I like the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie, even though it diverted a bit from the flavor. It at least had a lighter feel to it. This one looks like it's going very dark, back to what Gore Verbinski was doing. Although I just thought that by the time he got to the third movie, he was biting off so much more than he can chew. But still, Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Men Tell No Tales looks pretty darn interesting, at the very least. That is it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Oscar shorts in all three categories: animation, live action, and documentary. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Gonna have a little bit of a diversion here because I'm gonna only cover, it's not really one movie. It's technically like 15 movies, but they're all short films and they're in different blocks. This week in limited release and in various theaters that are going to continue rolling out on different weeks. Like, I know for a fact, this is opening in Columbus, Ohio, my hometown. I think this doesn't open for another week or two in Cleveland, which is, you know, just a couple hours away in Ohio. I've always loved short films. Even before I started making films, even before I started reviewing films, I always liked short films because I think they're sort of a forgotten, ignored category. Now, with YouTube and Vimeo and a lot of online delivery platforms for video, you've seen more people doing their own short films. And actually, there's a wealth of short films out there on YouTube. Whether it's animation you like or documentary or live action, there's some really cool stuff out there. And that's where people cut their teeth. In fact, way back when I was first getting interested in making films, I mean, we're talking like 20 years ago, there was a DVD series called Short, and it compiled short films. And I loved that series, and it ended up dying because, well, YouTube eventually came up and sort of killed any sort of market for that. So every year there are 15 films nominated in three different categories: animation, live action, and documentary. Very few people get a chance to see them, except maybe the Pixar one that gets nominated every year for animation, because that's always tacked on to something else. Like this year, Piper is the movie that Pixar got nominated for in animation, and it was attached to, I believe, Finding Dory. You can get them on demand. I believe they open up on demand in 2 weeks. But if you're in a market that has them playing in the theater, you can go check them out on the big screen. Now, I always love animation. So for me, it's always anticipated to see what the animated films are. And while I don't have a problem with the animated films that they have in this series, it wasn't the strongest block. The five that are nominated were good movies, but They weren't the standout ones that you normally expect. I mean, Piper, everyone remembers that, about the little bird on the beach. That's a Pixar movie. They have another one called Pearl, Cider, and Cigarettes, which is like 35 minutes, and it's more of a narrative about a guy whose friend is sort of self-destructive. That was not my cup of tea, but it's different. But it's the one that is not appropriate for kids, even though a lot of the other movies, the short films, are, because they're animation. And maybe they'll go over the kid's head, but you know, a lot of people say, oh, animation, bring kids to it. There's two other ones, Blind Vaisha, which is a Canadian film, and Pearl, which is an American film, which are more sort of like, they're sort of like Parasite and Cigarettes, where they sort of give this sort of slice of life of a narrative reality. Pearl's about a car that a kid has memories of, and Blind Vaisha is a little more abstract. Borrowed Time is a little more very specific about a stagecoach, and it looks very good. However, the ones that I think are really the ones that are going to turn heads are the live action, and particularly the documentaries. In the live action one, they're all foreign language. So you're just going to have to deal with the fact you're going to have to read. And you can go see this. They're going to be shown on one block. You can usually catch it as it's like 2 hours. There's one called Animus Interius. It's French. I don't know how to speak with a French pronunciation or accent, but it means enemies within. In my opinion, this one, and there's one called Silent Nights, that are have the edge to win because they hit the social issues. Right now, the big social issue is immigrants and different cultures and culture clashing and nationalism and free travel. And Enemies Within from France is about this man going for French citizenship, but his history's from Algeria, which he was born there when it was part of France, but they're interrogating him and trying to infiltrate what they think is a terror cell in a mosque, and they're strong-arming him. And what I find fascinating about this, with all the immigrant issues that are going on today in America, here's films that are made with no American influence whatsoever, but they are dealing with the same issues, especially someplace like France that had some pretty significant terrorist attacks in the last couple of years. So their sense of nationalism and possible xenophobia is apparent in this. So Enemies Within is interesting. Silent Nights is from Denmark. It's about an African immigrant in Denmark who's homeless, who's trying to make money to send back to his family because they're the poorest of the poor in Ghana. And it's him striking up a relationship with a woman who works at a soup kitchen. And it shows, again, the culture clash, the prejudices that people carry. And it's so easy in America to look at prejudice and xenophobia and think that it's like everyone always points fingers at America and say, oh, you guys are racist pigs. But you realize these ideas and behavior and attitudes and fears are universal, and they're all over. Whenever you have a hotbed of war, you're going to get refugees and you're going to get people fleeing, going to the more stable countries. And it doesn't matter whether it's America or France or Denmark, you're going to run into these. Now, there's a couple other ones that have nothing to do with the refugees, like Sing, which is a Hungarian film about a girl finding her voice in a choir with a teacher who's a little oppressive, or Time Code, which is from Spain. It's this cute little love story between these two people who work at a private garage and communicate to each other by dancing at the cameras while no one's looking. And then there's one called The Railroad Lady. I'm not going to even try and pronounce the French name of it, but it's from Switzerland, about a woman striking up an unlikely, odd romance with a train engineer that drives by our house every day. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's just quickly hit on the documentary block as well. Once again, I think what's going to tip the winning hand are ones about immigrants and refugees and xenophobia and these problems that we have, these real problems, again, not necessarily from an American perspective. Yes, there's a couple other ones like Extremists, which is from America, and it's about people dealing with palliative care and end-of-life situations in a hospital. Joe's Violin is about a Holocaust survivor who gives a violin to the New York Public Schools and how it's sort of elevated into almost legendary status. You've got a couple other ones like 41 Miles, which is a very just slice of life type movie about this little island in Greece, the island of Lesbos, which gets people smuggling refugees all the way over from they smuggle them through Turkey, and they're coming over and they're getting overrun with refugees, and they're trying to save people, and people are, I mean, it's only 4 miles to get there, but you know, people drown and the dangers of that, which is something we can relate to in America, especially what we saw happening with Cuban refugees and Haitian refugees. Then there's also Watani, My Homeland, which is a UK movie about this family from Syria dealing with the fact that their father's fighting against ISIS and they're wanting to travel to Germany. Germany, of all places, where you say, oh, Germany's not war-torn. Well, you know, 70 years it was, but now it's not. And they're Muslim, and they're dealing with the barriers they find there. But the one I really think is going to win this one is a powerful movie called The White Helmets. It's basically the Red Cross in Syria, their own version of it, where they go in and they save people from places that have been bombed. And not just bombed by ISIS, but bombed by other people like the Russians or other forces that are dropping bombs on Syria. And you see the innocent people that are being saved by these people who go into harm's way and sometimes get killed. A very powerful movie. Look for The White Helmets to win Best Documentary, and most likely Enemies Within win Best Live Action Short. But finally, no matter which one you pick, each program of the Oscar shorts totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Lego Batman movie and John Wick Chapter 2. a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes Not the End and Gobble offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the full feature-length film reviews that we're going to be talking about. The first one is the Lego Batman movie. In the Lego version of Gotham City, the Dark Knight tries to reconcile his emotions and relationships with Alfred, Barbara Gordon, Dick Grayson, and the Joker.
Master Bruce, your greatest fear is...
Snakes?
No.
Clowns?
No. It's being a part of a family again.
No, now it's snake clowns because you put that idea in my head.
Sir, you need to take responsibility for your life, and it starts by raising the young orphan you adopted. Whee!
Hello, sequin camera.
Hi, Batman!
No way!
Come catch your greatest enemy.
Superman is my greatest enemy.
Superman's not a bad guy!
Then I'd say that I don't currently have a bad guy.
I remember when the Lego movie came out a couple years ago, and it was a phenomenon. Nobody expected the Lego movie to do as well as it did, and that's kind of a shame because it's sort of setting this one up to have to do as well, or at least close to what the Lego movie did. The reason the Lego movie did so well is because kids these days play with Legos, and they're branded throughout other markets, like, you know, Batman, the superheroes, but you also have Star Wars and Harry Potter and all these other types of media tie-ins to the Lego figurines. And if you've ever watched the shorts, the Lego shorts, now I'm not talking about the independent brick movies that they do, but the actual shorts, like the Star Wars shorts, you know, they have... I talked about the Free Makers Adventures a couple weeks ago. There's, of course, the Star Wars ones that they do. They're very funny, and they're irreverent, and all of these are done with that sort of wink and nod. And when the Lego movie did so well, they said, hey, look, you know, we got the Batman property. We're Warner Brothers. We own Batman. Let's make a Lego Batman movie. And what's great about it is they stuck with what worked. They got Will Arnett to continue to play Batman, and they just expanded his universe to the whole of Gotham City. And it doesn't try to cross over into the Lego movie. It doesn't try to make itself work necessarily with the Lego movie. It's just Lego Batman doing his thing. And it totally works, and here's why. Not only does it keep that whimsical feel that all the Lego shorts would always have, but it also understands the character of Batman. Anyone who's read the comics knows Batman's brooding. And I mean, it's always annoying when you see them trying to do a brooding Superman movie. You're like, no, that's Batman's bag. Let him do it. But you go to all the comic books. I remember reading the comic books in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s. And you saw Batman as somebody who was haunted by his past and who saw the Joker as the flip side of him. He's, you know, somebody who is insane and has a mask, basically. And there's a lot of truth in that. And they mine that properly and they keep it. I mean, they go crazy and goofy at times, but they keep with that mythology. It's the same reason why I've always said animated films, like if you go look at the DC animated universe or the Marvel animated universe or any other superhero property, usually when they do the animated TV shows or specials or direct to DVD movies, they are very respectful of the original source material. Whereas when you give this to a director, I don't care who you are, whether you're Brett Ratner thinking about doing a Superman movie or whether you're Christopher Nolan that everybody worships, but also kind of took a crap on the franchise's history, they always try to put their own touch and reimagine it the way they would do it. There's more respect there. And that's why this is one of the best Batman movies you're going to see, as silly and fun as it is. It's also very colorful. It's got a lot of action. It's, you know, you can see it in 3D. You can see it in IMAX, much like the Lego movie works in that sense. I actually didn't see it in 3D. I've seen the trailer in 3D, but they didn't show us the movie in 3D or in the IMAX. But I mean, it's a big screen movie for sure. And, you know, as I saw the Lego movie in 3D, this one I think would work just as well. It's very fun. I mean, Will Arnett as Batman is hilarious. And you heard it in the trailer I played with him talking about snakes and clowns and snake clowns. They don't take themselves too seriously, but they take them himself seriously enough to have a lot of fun with the mythology, with the characters, with the toys. And I took my sons. I have an 8-year-old. I have a 13-year-old. My 15-year-old couldn't go because he had to work. But my other two kids came with me and they loved it. It was such a blast. We find ourselves quoting it on the way home. It's got a great voice cast. Like I said, Will Arnett. You've got Ralph Fiennes as Alfred. You've got Rosario Dawson as Barbara Gordon. You've got Michael Cera as a hilarious turn as Robin. And you hear him in there as Dick Grayson, who eventually can become Robin. And it's honestly, it's the first time they've ever had Robin in a bona fide movie since the Batman and Robin movie that was terrible, the Joel Schumacher films. Or back, you know, in the 60s with the wackadoodle Batman TV show that they made into a feature-length film and released in theaters. So it's a great time. It's totally worth taking your kids. And I can't wait to see more of these Lego movies. They're a blast. So I'm going to say the Lego Batman movie totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about John Wick Chapter 2. After finishing his quest for revenge, John Wick is pulled back into the life by a crime boss to whom he owes a favor and ends up killing like a billion people.
How good to see you again so soon, Mr. Wick.
I need you to do this task.
I'm not that guy anymore.
You have no idea what's coming.
Somebody please get this man a gun.
Whoever comes, I'll kill them. I'll kill them all.
Of course you will.
I remember when John Wick came out, same year, actually, I believe, as the Lego movie. It was in October. It was just this movie that was out there, and people were like, John Wick's coming out. That looks interesting. Can't wait to see it, kind of thing. And then we saw it, and it's an exhilarating movie. I mean, it's violent as all get out. These films are violent. And there was a part of this movie, in fact, I'd say about the first half of it, I was a little concerned that they were going for a PG-13 rating and then just added a whole bunch of digital blood. And then as it got farther and farther along, the violence got more and more extreme. But I think they may have still hadn't decided. That's my one big problem with this. There's a part of it that I'm like, I could see them wondering if they could just not put blood in and make it a PG-13 movie, which John Wick should never be a PG-13 movie. And it worked as a hard R movie back in 2014. This is likewise a hard R movie with a lot of blood and, I mean, a huge, ridiculously high body count. Keanu Reeves works for the role, very much like Neo in The Matrix. I remember my sister once said to me that her reasoning as to why he was so good in The Matrix is because he had so few lines. And I think that she's absolutely right on that. And there's another Matrix connection with this one, aside from the fact that he doesn't say a whole lot, which is when Keanu Reeves excels as an actor, but he also has a chance to share the screen with Lawrence Fishburne in this movie. There's a little scene in there, and you can also approach it as saying, well, maybe this is an alternate version of The Matrix where Neo and Morpheus don't know that they're part of The Matrix, and this is just where they ended up, instead of him working for a tech company and Morpheus leading a resistance outside of The Matrix. But that's neither here nor there. I digress. Ultimately, John Wick is a lot of fun because it's a ridiculous shoot 'em up that exists in a hyper real universe where these assassins go and they have a hotel that they can all stay in and they're not allowed to kill anybody on the premises. There's one scene where they like go to a bank and it's like, it's kind of uncomfortable to watch because it's like a Jewish bank and by like Hasidic Jews sitting there counting money and a guy taking him to the safety deposit box so he can get all his stuff. And I'm like, really? This, no one's complaining that this is anti-Semitic because unless it was so blatant and obvious that it was meant to be a joke. I don't know. I still couldn't get it because it's not like he then went, well, I guess he does get John Leguizamo to try and fix his car. So I guess that's stereotypical too. So there's parts of it that I didn't know if it was trying to be irreverent, but it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of blood. It's digital mostly. There's a lot of gunplay. It does a bit of gymnastics to try and excuse the story because the first film made sense. Somebody killed his dog. That was a gift from his dead wife. And that sent him after this person. This one, it gets a little bit heavy-handed in trying to set the wheels in motion, but you just kind of have to accept it because you're like, come on, let's just get to the killing. overall, John Wick Chapter 2 is a lot of fun if you like some R-rated shoot 'em up violence. So I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about 50 Shades Darker, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at 1984. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. For the final segment, let's get to the final movie review. We're going to be talking about 50 Shades Darker. After they broke up over a spanking, Anastasia Steele and Christian Grey get back together and have a lot of boring vanilla sex disguised as provocative kinky sex.
I want you back. I'm not very good at this.
Okay, fine. I will have dinner with you because I'm hungry. But we are only talking, and that is it.
Are you happy?
I've never been happier.
Do you think you're the first woman who tried to save him?
He's changing. It's not what he wants anymore,
but it's what he needs.
When the first film came out, I actually gave it a relatively positive review. I was like, it's not a good movie, but I mean, you gotta take it for what it is on the surface. I mean, 50 Shades of Grey, it was a Twilight fan fiction that turned into basically horny housewife literature. It's something that women could read in the safety of their own home and say, I don't watch porn, but I can read this. Oh, it's about bondage. That's basically what it is. It's meant to be provocative. And I never read the book. I don't really care to. But, as I understand, it does get very graphic in the book. Not very well-written graphic content, but it is graphic in the book. Well, then they had to make a movie out of it in today's day and age, and, of course, deal with the censors. So they ended up making a relatively humdrum, boring movie that worked for people who are fans of the book. So I was like, yeah. And actually, Dakota Johnson was quite good in the movie. I mean, Jamie Dornan was dull, but she was good. She actually was kind of a bright light in the film. So I get what that was. Now, this one is a sequel, and it's meant to continue the story, and it's pushing towards an end, but it does feel like that bridge. And in that sense, it still has a lot of the problems from the first book. I mean, it in fact doubles down on them. I mean, sort of the puritanical backwards vision that BDSM is wrong and depraved. You know, that it always has to result from psychological scarring or some abuse in their childhood. It's not. It's a fetish. I mean, BDSM is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with it. If you're two consenting adults, one can be dominant, one can be submissive, and that's what gets you off, knock yourself out, man. Have fun. Go buy whatever equipment you want and have a ball in your own bedroom. There's nothing wrong with this. Everybody has some sort of fetish. Let your freak flag fly, people. Come on. This whole puritanical, only traditional ways of having sex, missionary position with this, it's just dumb. I mean, we should be beyond that. Again, as long as they're consenting at all. So the problem with the movies, the problem with this story is that Anastasia is not into that. She just likes the rich, good-looking guy. And so, of course, he's damaged and he's got to get better. And so it has a completely backwards puritanical look at sex. Ironically, this was meant to be provocative in a sex-filled Twilight-type movie, and it's just as archaic and puritanical as the other ones are. But all that aside, my biggest problem with this movie is nothing happens. They get back together. They have sex. It retreads a lot of the stuff that we saw in the first movie. And I mean, Dakota Johnson's fine. And I mean, Jamie Dornan's still terrible, but she's fine in it, but she's given nothing to work with. I give her credit for, especially in the first movie, she had a very natural looking body. She didn't look like she had worked out to make herself look ripped for the movie. She's like, oh, I'm going to have some not perfect exact fit underwear model look, but that looked very real, and I thought that was actually kind of a turn on. And as much as I like watching her take her panties off, they do it like 4 or 5 times. And by the like the 4th or 5th time, I'm like, really? We're going over this again? And then the sex is boring. This, I mean, the first movie, it was like her them experimenting and her getting introduced to this sort of lifestyle. And this one is just, it's a snooze fest. It's the most boring version of BDSM. Just like the first one where there's no real BDSM in there. There's a little bit of spanking and maybe he handcuffs her. That's about it. I mean, but the movie's so drawn to the female form because they can't show any male nudity because that'll get them an X rating. Oh. And they work forever to avoid showing any genitals of any kind, even though it's a sex movie. But it's done with such a disregard and disinterest in sex that it's, I mean, it's almost like aliens trying to describe sex and having never experienced it. Anyways, 50 Shades Darker is really just 50 Shades Duller. It does nothing, and you can kind of skip it if you really want to see the last movie. 50 Shades Darker totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Rings could go for $20 million, but more likely Split was going to hold well and win because of dwindling viewership of the Super Bowl, and it did. I was absolutely right. Split came in with $14 million. Rings came in with $13 million. Did not do very well. The Space Between Us bombed with less than $4 million. For as much as that movie had to cost, that's not good. And I Am Not Your Negro did a little under $700,000 in limited release, which is actually pretty good. This week, I think you're looking at $60 to $80 million for the Lego Batman movie, partly because of Batman, but also because the Lego movie was so popular. It did like $72 million its opening weekend. I think you could do at least as good with this one. And like I said, Batman's going to have a huge effect on this. 50 Shades is going to be softer, no pun intended. It's going to be softer with around $40 million, about half of what that first film was. It's still going to do well, but it's not going to be the juggernaut the first film was. And then John Wick, I think, is solid for $25 to $30 million, partly because of the release date. Gets a little more money. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now's the time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The one I want to spotlight isn't actually new, but it's relevant because I talked about John Hurt last week, and it's 1984, which you can get on DVD and Blu-ray. It's also available to rent on Amazon, elsewhere on demand. In George Orwell's terrifying look at a totalitarian future, a lone worker named Winston Smith resists government control of free thought.
He imagined the world held in a grip of fear, of continuous surveillance, of organized hatred, and ceaseless war.
We are the children, builders of the future.
A world where pleasure is forbidden, where language and history are being systematically destroyed, and where living people simply vanish. The visionary was George Orwell. He turned his nightmare into the biggest selling futuristic novel of our time.
I remember when this came out in 1984, and I actually saw it. Well, technically, I think it came out in 1985, like January in America. It opened in 1984 in England. And there was a lot going on in 1984. You had the Olympics, you had a presidential election. I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening, but there was a lot of people looking back at 1984, the book, which was written in 1948. The key is the Soviet Union was still around. That's what the book was written about. Now, I've always liked Animal Farm a little bit better because it's not as dense. I mean, I think 1984 is a better book, but I prefer Animal Farm. It's a little breezier, a little easier to read, a little more whimsical, and it's not very subtle about who's who in the Soviet Union. You know, there's a Lenin, the pig is a Lenin, and you've got Stalin in there. He doesn't pull the veil very tightly around its subject matter, but it's more about the Soviet Union and the rise of that and its control than about necessary totalitarianism. I read this book a few years ago, and it gives you a totally different look now that the Soviet Union is no more and hasn't been around for 20 years. And because of that, you can look at this for what it does represent. And yes, you can still see the socialism angles of it. You can see, you know, it still says Ingsoc and the rationing you saw in socialism. But really, 1984 is not, I mean, it is about the Soviet Union, but it's about the totalitarian system that the Soviet Union utilized. And it could be anybody, because he also has some parallels to what Nazi Germany did, which was a socialist, but national socialists. And in a way, conservatives have always kind of felt safe with 1984, because they're like, oh, well, Orwell was going after the Soviet Union, and we hated the Soviet Union. They were our enemies. They're the Big Red Scare. But 1984 transcends that. Yeah, sure, there's the Soviet elements there, but it has a lot more to say, and it's very relevant in today's world, especially if you want to apply to someplace like Russia, where it is kind of a totalitarian state still, even though it's supposed to be a democracy. If you really look into and study what Putin has done over the last 20 years to stay in power and, like, assassinate critics. One just got put into a coma this week, for crying out loud. So in a world of today where you got things like people talking about alternative facts and fake news, I mean, if you have to have, it's insane that we have to have a debate about what actual fake news is. And spoiler alert, it's not news you just don't like. Fake news is made up stuff, not stuff that you think doesn't make you look good or stuff that you don't think that they did exactly how you wanted it to be reported. But the fact that we're having that debate, people should watch this movie and read this book. When things are getting scrubbed off of government websites and we're getting immediate actions by leaders that undermine separate branches of government, I don't care where your politics lies, but that has to concern you. When people are out there trying to erase data, when people are out there trying to change the past by just yelling it louder, that's a problem, regardless of politics. So especially now, today, 1984 is just as relevant, if not more, because it's removed from the Soviet Union angle and it's about totalitarianism and how those tools are utilized and how we can avoid that. So 1984 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
A couple new releases this week that are worth mentioning. You've got Loving, which is, of course, nominated for some Academy Awards. You've got Almost Christmas, which was pretty good. I wish they would release it at Christmas. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Fist Fight, The Great Wall, and A Cure for Wellness. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.